This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
This week on Meet and Three, we're foraging. From Prospect Park to an iPhone app, what does it mean to find our own food?
We've recorded, I think, over 1,300 species of fungi occurring in New York City.
You know, my ingredients are making themselves, and so that rather than having the stress of needing to source the things I need, I can just walk out my back door and I can have them.
Foraging overall is born out of living with the land and with the seasons by indigenous people.
Tune in to Meet and Three, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. It's Tuesday, June 22nd, 2021, and we're recording remotely. We've been talking a lot about brewing systems and just everything that it takes to make a brewery not only operate, but thrive and grow. And we've got an interesting conversation today with some friendly guests from upstate in New York. Let's go around the room and introduce yourselves. Let's start with Scott.
I'm Scott Veltman. I am the head brewer at Indian Ladder Farm Cidery and Brewery up in Altamont, New York.
Great. Dieter?
I'm one of the owners, Dietrich Goering, of Indian Ladder Farm Cidery and Brewery in Altamont, New York.
And Melanie?
Hi, Melanie Fraunhofer with Fraunhofer Design.
All right. So I've had you all on the show before, but not too long ago, I learned that you guys had built a new brewing system. You've been talking about it for several years and you're able to expand. And what was interesting is that you worked with Fraunhofer Design. So we're going to do a little backstory on Fraunhofer Design. We first met Melanie after Common Roots had its fire, and you guys were instrumental in helping them get back open a couple years ago. So Melanie, give us the backstory on Fraunhofer. There was your father or grandfather, it was a machine shop. And what does a machine shop actually make?
Yeah, so 40 plus years ago, my dad started a small machine shop in our basement, and it has grown into a large facility here in upstate New York with our own water jet facility, fabrication shop, and machine shop. It's a job shop, so nothing's ever the same. It's not a production facility. It's a lot of different jobs coming in and out every day. We do a lot of work in the pulp and paper industry, and that was sort of our bread and butter. Still is, to be honest with you. And about 6 years ago, we were approached to, because of our experience with stainless steel, we were approached to look at some craft brewing tanks, fermenters actually. And from there, some light bulbs went off, and Fraunhofer Design became another arm of our Fraunhofer Tool, our parent company, the machine shop. And it's kind of taken on a life of its own and become a pretty amazing second part of our company, where we get to express our engineering work, our design work, and a lot more, I would say a lot more fun jobs working in the craft brewing industry.
Wow. And then Dieter, just give us some background on how long have you been planning to build this brewery? A little backstory on it.
I think that we started discussing building a bigger brewery about nine years ago, and started looking for somebody to build us at the time what we thought would be a pretty big brewery for our little farm, would be a 3-barrel, and we were looking for somebody who we didn't want direct fire. And we didn't want an electric brewery that had the rods in it. We were looking for something that would mimic a larger scale brewery. And that's where we came across Fraunhofer, because they were making this great little system called the Traveler.
And then Scott, what was your role in this? Because I know, how long have you worked at Indian Ladder?
So I've been working at Indian Ladder for just a little over 3 years. My original goal is, well, Dieter's plan was to be 100% New York State. So I thought, hey, why not we use New York State made equipment? So we looked at another New York State manufacturer, and they were a little bit out of our price range, and customer service wasn't there. And then I actually got in contact with Christian Weber from Common Roots, and he was using Fraunhofer stuff. So got in contact with him. He said, go take a look at the place up in Argyle, because they also have Fraunhofer equipment as well. And next thing you know, we're working with Mel and just only dealing with Fraunhofer. The biggest thing for me is the quality, and it's very easy. If I have any issues with any problem, like with anything with the equipment, they'll answer a phone call, or, you know, they'll be down at our place in less than an hour, which is great.
Yeah. And Melanie, what's the design process like? I mean, I noticed on your website you have design engineers. Not only are the brew systems, what are some other systems that you guys are making?
Oh, yeah. We, at the core of everything, we are a design and engineering firm. So 90%+ of our work is in the craft beverage industry, but we, every now and then, our engineers get an odd job that comes across their desk for something. And, you know, in a completely different industry, we did some work for a cheese farm, piece of yogurt equipment. We work with different dairies throughout New York State, or even still some work in more like large manufacturing facilities. So our engineers can do anything, but they have a lot of fun with our craft brewing projects, and the design process is long and but really creative. And I think our time with Dietrich and Scott, we spent, you guys, am I exaggerating when I say 2 years designing this system?
I believe that's no exaggeration, though.
Yeah. So it's great, because something that's unique about Fraunhofer design is that nothing is off the shelf. So you can come to us and say, you have to get my system in through a standard office-sized door. Figure it out, Mel and team. Or, you know, we are on a farm in this beautiful restored barn with a dome-shaped roof, which is the Indian Ladder example. And we're going to try and fit a canning line, a 3-barrel system, and a 20-barrel system in X amount of square feet, make it work. And so nothing is off the shelf. Nothing is standard. When it comes to working with Fraunhofer design, we take your blueprints, we take your ideas, we take your, not just your facility, but also your brewing style, your operational needs. So in this case, Scott's preferences and Dietrich's preferences of how things are going to look and operate. And we build a system custom to you and your brewery. You know, I don't really see why you would ever buy off, besides budget. And, you know, it's not always going to work out for you in the long run, to buy something that's standard, because nobody brews the same, no facility is the same. So you might as well get something that's made just for you. And with that comes a pretty long, not always, but in this case, long design process to make something perfect for their needs at Indian Ladder. And Scott, Dietrich, their general contractors, and my engineers work really closely together. And in the end came out with this beautiful final product that hopefully we'll live in that space for years to come.
That's great. And so Dietrich and then Scott, what were you guys looking for with your brew system? I know that you had worked on a really small system for years, and I know the plan had been to expand your capacity.
Yeah, well, we once we discovered that, you know, we wanted something bigger and we were only going to go to, you know, we were thinking, oh, 3 barrels would be great. We quickly realized that 3 barrels was not going to even be enough. Fraunhofer was offering this great opportunity, we thought, where we could get into the 3-barrel very quickly and put it in our, you know, tiny production facility. And we could be using that while they were designing and building our 20-barrel system. And then there was the idea in the beginning, I believe, that we would probably sell this three barrel back to Fraunhofer and they would refurbish it and sell it to somebody else. But along the way here, we've decided that, well, the three barrel is actually a pretty fabulous little system. I think Scott will agree because it does mimic a larger system. And we've decided to keep it as a pilot brewery and to do experimental beers and to, you know, one-offs and like that, that you don't necessarily want to make 20 barrels of.
Yeah. Scott?
Yeah. I honestly love having this little three barrel system. It keeps everything fresh, you know, keeps everything fresh, but it is great to have the small system and the big system, because if I have the big system, all that product can go into out for wholesale and basically just a lot of packaging stuff. But for the smaller system, I can, you know, make a pickle sour beer or make a beer with blue-green algae and just kind of have fun with it.
So what were you looking for in the big system?
Pretty much the ease. So that way I wanted to have my mash tun and lauter tun completely separate. The idea with that is once I'm done mashing in, I run off to the lauter tun. If I don't go directly to the kettle, if I already have a beer going in there, I can actually move it to the mash tun and use that as like a holding tank and possibly even like preheat a little bit in there, just so when I'm done blasting out the kettle and the wort line, I can just transfer that over the kettle and then just start up with a new brew. So I grew up, you know, doing a lot of production brewery work. So
and part of like what Mel was saying before about why you wouldn't buy something just standard off the shelf, you know, for us, we've made, you know, along the way in this 2-year process, we've made a lot of modifications to the system to fit our building. And, you know, it's given us time to think about it for, you know, things that a lot of breweries don't think about until it's way too late, like grain out. You know, we've got an automatic grain out, which is, you know, going to be fabulous time saver and back saver and all those things. And, you know, just recently, you know, we made a modification, you know, just like 2 weeks before delivery on the fermenters that we discovered is going to save us a lot, because we are on, you know, we're on a farm here. And so we have to be conscious of, you know, where our waste is going and so on. We're not going to a municipal waste system. So we were able to make some modifications in that you know, were kind of last minute changes, but, you know, working with Fraunhofer was great. And they were like, oh yeah, we can do that without any, you know, without any problem. It, you know, it's going to take us, you know, a couple of days, but it worked out great.
Yeah. And Melanie, back to the backstory. So, well, first, wait, Scott, what beer are you making more of now on the 20 barrel system? And perhaps you might be drinking it too. I don't know.
Yeah, right. We actually haven't had the 20 barrel system up and running yet. We just took delivery of our 2 60 barrel fermenters and our 30 barrel bright tank. And at this rate, it looks like the end of July I'll be brewing on that. But right now I'm actually enjoying a freshly canned up 1974 Coup de Dour. It's just like a American light lager, and it was actually canned on a Fraunhofer canning line.
Wait, what do you call it? 1974 Coup de Dour?
Coup de Dour.
Is that one of your beers?
That is one of our beers. It's Dieter knows more of a story with the whole Coup de Dour thing.
So, maybe you should tell me about some of your beers, since last time I had it was at the Brisket King event in April in New York.
Mm-hmm. I try to blame Scott for all the beer names, but this one is actually mine, I'm afraid. So it's a kind of a stupid story, but somebody, a friend of mine as a joke, sent me a little ad out of the Wana Digest for sale, 1974 Coup de Dour for $150. And I wish I'd bought it, because now we're trying to find a 1974 Coup de Dour to hang on the wall. And now it turns out they're very valuable.
And what's the beer? What's the beer like?
Oh, it's absolutely phenomenal. It just reminds you of a beer that you drink in 1974. It's just a very light lager. There's just pretty much just Pilsner malt and just a little bit of our grown nugget hops just for bittering. So it's about 5.2%. And yeah, just very easy drinking and something you just want to hang out with in the summertime, especially a couple days ago. It was or actually yesterday, it was over 90 and really humid. So I kind of wish we were canning up that day.
Yeah. And Dieter, I think it was like the summer of 2015 or 16. I was with you when you guys were harvesting like one of your first grain harvests.
That was probably our third year on barley. We have not been growing any barley the last couple of years due to the problems that you saw when you were here. We're waiting for New York State and Cornell to come up with a variety of barley that we can handle here in this climate. So we've been buying, you know, our barley locally. We are still growing some oats and some rye and stuff to put in our beer. But we will be getting back to the barley game here probably, maybe not next year, but the following year, because we want to get into a better grain handling system here on the farm. So we've been concentrating really hard on hops and improving the quality of our hops and adding some new varieties and eliminating some of the ones that are not really great for us. So our hop yields have, due to that focus, our hop yields have gone up and our oil content and quality has gone way up.
Wow. What are the hops that have really been working for you? And then Scott, what is it like working with those hops?
Well, we're proving that the terroir here is really making for different oil contents on hops that are very traditionally grown out west. I think Scott will agree. Right now, one of our most favorite hops is Brewer's Gold, which is kind of a forgotten hop from the 1970s. And for us, it even to replace it, like if Scott runs out or something, if we use West Coast Brewer's Gold, the oil content is not anything like we're going to find. In fact, Scott's with our hop varieties at this point, Scott's kind of given up on the names and just goes by, the analysis that we get in order to make beer.
So using Brewer's Gold is definitely very, very interesting because it has all the stuff that people are looking for with New England IPAs, with, the super tropical and tangerine and peach kind of aromas and flavors. And we can actually get that with Brewer's Gold. One of my favorite ones that we have right now is Columbus. Columbus never grew well for us. This one has a high myrcene content. So it's very old school with that Columbus, like that onion that you would get out of there. It was just, it's so nice and it blends really nice with all, let's see, what else is a good one that I like to use with Columbus? Our nugget is really nice. Helderberg. I realize this year's Helderberg isn't what it should be just because how the growing season was. But that is something to really nice blend in with that Brewer's Gold, because you get like a little bit of that pineapple you get from Helderberg with that like tangerine of Brewer's Gold, which is just phenomenal. I'll just use those hops all the time.
Yeah. Well, is there a hoppy beer that you know you're going to make in the 20 barrel system?
Probably Superstar. Superstar IPA is one of our flagship beers. That one mostly focuses on using Columbus, Chinook, and Brewer's Gold.
And you have a plan. I mean, you probably have a sense of some of the first beers you're going to brew on the 20 barrel system.
Absolutely. Yeah. I want to mostly just focus on the core beers so people down in your neck of the woods can actually try our beers. They've tried our ciders for years and they've always wanted to have our beers, but we just can't give it to them because we pretty much run out at the farm and Yeah, we're brewing about 2-3 times a week. So it'll be nice to have the 20 barrel up so that way we can do our core beers and get people an idea. It's like, oh, this is what Indian Ladder Farms does. Like, I need to go up there and check these guys out. They have other stuff. They have a whole sour beer project that is very, very limited and damn delicious.
And Dieter, I know over the years, as you've been waiting to put in this bigger brewery, you've done a lot of collaborations with some breweries in New York City. You've provided hops to some of those collabs.
Oh yeah. Yeah. We've done,
give us a snapshot of some of your favorites.
Well, I think one of our favorites was Creature Comforts. We made this fantastic barrel aged sour beer with them, and we shipped our malted barley down there and our hops, and we shipped fruit down there from the farm. I mean, I can't remember what the shipping costs on all of that was, but then we all flew down there and had a they were fabulous hosts, and we had a great time. So that was probably one of the more memorable ones. But, you know, locally we've done quite a few. We just recently did one with Kevin at Rare Form. It's, you know, we try to make them as fun as possible. We're starting to do some non-beer collaborations just to try to mix it up a little bit. So, like, we're doing a collaboration with Rad Soap. We've done a music collaboration with Ritz Carlton. Those are great things. It's great for cross-marketing for us and for, you know, the people we're collaborating with. We get to reach people that may not, you know about Indian Ladder Farms, and they get to reach people that may not know about their products.
Dieter, I want to ask you a question. You've been a cidery and a brewery almost since the beginning. And I know that you've sourced a lot of the apples for your cider on site. How is this going to change things? Are there going to be parts of the equipment that you'll be using with cider? Because I still think of you as both equally. It says Indian Ladder Farms, cidery and brewery. I don't know if Scott, first, you want to tackle that about this identity that you guys have? Because I love it. You show up at an event, you've got cider and beer, and they're both great.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, you have to think about it too. Sometimes brewers get tired of drinking beer all the time, as weird as that sounds. They want to try something a little different. And Dieter's vision when he started doing cider, he wanted to make cider for the beer drinker. So his goal was not to have cider that was super, super sweet. He wanted to have more of the drier, more tart ciders, which I think he has a great vision on that. And Alex is really good at pushing that forward.
Basically, when we moved the three-barrel system out of the production space that it was in, we were cider and beer in that same production space. So now we're separated. So one building is for cider production and the other is for beer production. So they both have their own homes now and have a pretty equal footing as far as production goes.
In the beginning, did you have to brew beer on one day and cider on another? Wasn't there some quirky licensing issue in the early days?
Yes, there was. They didn't understand that you don't really brew cider. Cider is more like making wine. It's blending. So it was kind of a hard thing to wrap our heads around. So we could only blend cider one day, and then after a 24-hour period, we were allowed to brew beer. So, you know, it was an odd thing. But we don't have to worry about that anymore because we're not in the same building.
That's great. So I just want to go back to Melanie. Melanie, I still find it fascinating that your dad had the machine shop. At one time we talked about the importance of trades and trade schools. Can you tell us a little bit about your dad's background?
Absolutely. And you're right. We did have this conversation the last time I was on, and we're still a big proponent of vocational school and the trades. My dad did does not have a formal 4-year college education. He, after graduating high school and going through a machining program in high school, went to right to work in a machine shop and worked at night so that he could, or excuse me, went to school at night and does have a machining degree that he put himself through at night. But ever since then, you know, years after my dad got our Fraunhofer tool, our parent company, up and running, he has really made an effort to work closely with our local vocational school, which is BOCES, here in New York, and keep their machining program or any of their trade programs alive and well. He was on the board of our local BOCES, and you know, we always are trying to collaborate with them, bring their students in for internships in our shop. Same thing, you know, on the design side, bringing in interns as often as we can so that, you know, they realize vocational school can lead you to a great career. It doesn't have to be a formal 4-year education in order to have a great job here in New York State. So, and as people are listening to this, we're always looking, we're always looking to bring more people on and having a background in not just machining, but having a background in, as an electrician, a plumber, those are both important to us, as we do installs in breweries or, you know, around the country. We have electricians on our team. We have, large, you know, HVAC, specialists. We have plumbers. We work with a lot of different people who went through trade school for different trades and continue to be a huge proponent.
Yeah. And then how important is the steel? I read a mention that you guys are, your products are made with top quality stainless steel. How do you measure that steel is better than another steel?
Well, we have to trust the certifications that they come in with, and that really means sourcing them from the right places. So we have, you know, 40 years of experience in sourcing stainless steel. Our stainless steel is DFARS rated, which basically means that it's non-conflict certified stainless steel. There are certain countries around the world that in order to get this certification, it cannot come from. And so that just is, a nice stamp security to make sure that we know we're getting quality materials. We also source higher quality, not just from where it's from, but we use only 304 stainless steel on our tanks. And we actually use 316 stainless steel, which is a little bit stronger. Or it's actually about the nickel content, but I won't get into too many details. But it's better for our customers on our plumbing so that they can use any chemical, you know, any standard brewing chemical, leave their lines packed overnight. We want to make sure that anything we're providing our customers is lasting as long as their brewery is going to last. We don't want you to have to come back to us in a couple of years because things are wearing out. And that just, as Scott said that in the beginning, that, you know, he appreciates working with us for the quality. We really truly try to use the highest quality materials out there. It doesn't make it easy right now when stainless is so expensive. So when people choose to work with us, we appreciate that they're investing in quality even during these times when stainless steel is not cheap.
Yeah. And then going back to a few years ago, from what your Fraunhofer Tools was already doing, how were you able to just make that jump to making fermenter tanks and that first job?
We owe it all to the people. We have a great team that started at Fraunhofer Tool, and then we decided to break off the engineering team to a new company. Great people came with us, and I owe it all to them. Two of them are still on our team to this day. And we really jumped into learning everything we could about the brewing industry. Myself, my brother and dad, who work for or own Fraunhofer Tool, none of us knew anything about brewing. We relied on our local experts, like our friends here at Indian Ladder, at Common Roots, at Argyle Brewing Company in Greenwich, everyone who chose to work with us in the very beginning when we started to get into craft brewing equipment. We knew what we were doing when it came to engineering, the designs, to fabrication, but they taught us what we needed to know about brewing in order to get the full picture of the equipment that we were making. And it came pretty naturally to my team, Dave, who worked really closely on this Indian Ladder project. You know, he didn't know anything about brewing or brewing equipment, and he's now our lead engineer and does all of the drawings for every system that goes out. Ben, another person on our team who actually designed our canning line, he had some background. He was a brewer out in Colorado, which was great. He also, you know, helped the team make that transition. But we owe it all to our customers who worked with us from the very beginning as we were making that transition, and our internal team who chose to take that leap and, you know, learn a new skill.
Well, that's great. It's still exciting, and we got a lot more to talk about because I think this is a wonderful story. So we'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Roberta's was founded in Bushwick in 2008 and has become one of the most iconic restaurants in the country. HRN made its home inside of Roberta's in 2009, and together they have become part of the DIY fabric of the neighborhood. Roberta's, the pizza restaurant, is open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week and serves much more than just the famous wood-fired pizzas. Their team dreams up new salads, pastas, and sandwiches on the regular. Roberta's Tiki Bar is alive and well in the back garden, serving up frozen drinks in the summer and hot toddies in the winter. Stop by the bakery and takeout spot next door for fresh breads, sticky buns, and pizzas to go. And of course, there's the 2 Michelin-starred Blanca tucked away in the garden for truly daring diners. But Roberta's also extends beyond Bushwick, with multiple locations in New York City and now in Los Angeles. You can also find their frozen pies in grocery stores around the country. The spirit of Roberta's, like Heritage Radio Network, is everywhere. Here's to many more years of pizza-powered radio. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. Check us out and become a member at heritageradionetwork.org. So we got a family reunion here. We're talking with Scott and Dieter from Indian Ladder Farm, Cidery and Brewery, and Melanie from Fraunhofer. So, Dieter, what was your question for Melanie?
I wanted to know how the baby is.
Well, he is great. I am currently, I'm using air quotes as I say this, on maternity leave, because I'm actually, you know, I talk to Dieter or Scott, I feel like every day, and all my other awesome customers, but it's just because I can't get enough of everybody. The baby's great. He is 11 weeks old as of yesterday, and he's downstairs with his dad, and I am upstairs drinking a double IPA that Scott and Dietrich sent home for me. So you guys are giving me a mom's night out right now.
Wait, so which double IPA do you have?
Oh, Scott, I don't actually, is it your chronic? Yeah, how do you say that? CU2 chronic?
Yeah, cause of chronic. Yeah, so that.
Oh, cause of chronic. It looks like, cause of, oh, the my cousin, bad. Like, I'm already.
Hops are the cousin of chronic.
I love it. I haven't had a double IPA in a while. It's been a while since I drank, so I can't even read the label anymore.
I will say, since we're talking beer too, I've actually been really into double IPAs this summer.
I'm going to join you, Mel.
Oh, yeah.
Cheers.
And then, Melanie, just tell us who you're married to, because since listeners might not know that you've got a beer connection.
Oh, yes. Yeah, my husband, Christian, owns Common Roots. And it makes us one big beer-loving family.
That's great. That is awesome. And then, Scott, well, you know, when you guys were designing the brewery, I kind of want to go back to this because I'm just interested. I'm a geek, but I don't know anything about these systems. Mm-hmm. What was a question that you would have asked the design team at Fraunhofer early on, or was there just more like wonky, like geeky stuff?
Oh yeah, it's very geeky stuff. Like I was asking them on how we can make it more complicated.
And we did.
and you nailed it. So that's all I needed out of that. I was like, can you really do this? All right. So no, a big thing was so our new fermenters that we and our bright tank that we have, those are the first outdoor fermenters that they have made. So I've been trying to get them to do that because we're very limited on space up in the brewery. So we have all this outdoor room, so we might as well use it. So I decided, like, hey, if we can do this, like if we do like 4-inch insulation between the shell and the jacket, I think we'll be all right in the winter time, you know. But they've done it. They did it. And I'm excited to see how she does.
Well, yeah, that was it's always fun. I love when we do things for the first time. And I would say almost every project we do, there's something we do for the first time. And it was the outdoor tanks in this project. And it's a whole new level of engineering to design something that has to be outside and can withstand upstate New York weather and temperatures. So like Scott said, thicker insulation, safety, mm-hmm. you know, getting into your, these are big tanks. These are 260 barrel tanks and a 30 barrel bright, being able to access the top of these, safety when you're working under the tank in an enclosed space. And like I said, the elements. So there are things that Scott and team are going to have to access outside in the middle of the winter. And so a lot of it was making it, not only just function correctly, but safe and operationally just ease of access so that their jobs aren't too hard. So there were some fun challenges and I think they turned out beautifully.
That's really cool, man. And then how close is the system to running right now? I know you mentioned it, but I can't remember.
Yeah, we're probably, honestly, I would say probably about end of July. Middle to end of July, I think we'll be up and running on that system.
That is awesome. It's such a great story. And I feel like there's something I should be asking you, but I can't get my head around it. I keep thinking about trade schools and what machining is and how important these skills are to almost every product we have, right? Like in industry. I mean, to think that we could live without someone that could weld or plumb or do electrical, right, Melanie?
Absolutely. I mean, if you look at this entire project of Indian Ladder building this brewery and then what they're going to do in that brewery, it requires people who have trade skills. So from the equipment that we designed, we have machinists, we have welders, a fabrication team. We have people who are assembling these, like the canning line, for example, that's in that building. And then when we get down to the farm, you think about the farmers, everybody that works on that farm that has a trade. We're there in Scott and Dietrich work with this great father son team, that are, doing a lot of the work in the electric work, plumbing work, every day, right, guys, that we talk about this project or we do something, there's a person who has a trade, and the trades are dying and it's sad, and anything that we can do to revitalize that and make them flashy and trendy and exciting again, we're here to do.
Yeah, it's right now on the project, we have at any given day, there's like at least anywhere from 4 to 6 tradespeople on site doing things. I mean, there's a lot of the things are very specialized. You know, boiler installation is, you know, a specialized project. All the electrical work, this is a very, very, you know, not only is the system custom, but the buildings are all very custom and are being customized all the time. So, you know, we have to be able to work with people that are extraordinarily flexible. Our electrician is absolutely great. We've thrown some amazing curves at him and he's come through. I mean, everything from the excavator to, you know, burying the propane tanks on a hill and, you know, just like all the things that have had to been done. And you know, you can't do it without these people.
Yeah, we have a crane guy. We have a crane guy also. He's actually been at our brewery a few times. He goes by Clarence, so Clarence Crane. So tomorrow he'll be there to swing some shipping containers around in front of the brewery for the outer part of our new packaging facility that we're building there, as well as the other military kitchen and the latrine for the beer garden.
Yeah, we're very fortunate. We're very fortunate in this area. Not everybody has a crane guy that lives around the corner and that can be there on call.
Well, you have a lot of things around you. I remember the time you were doing grain, you had to bring that guy in to, was it to threat? What's it called when you
combine
in the grain? What's
that? We had to have our combine on call. Unfortunately, he has taken another job, and that is actually part of one of the reasons we're not growing barley right now, is because I don't have a combine guy right now. So,
well, I remember when I was there, it was like you guys were trying to get the wheat or the grain, the barley harvested before it rained, but then he needed to go get a part somewhere. Remember that day?
That wasn't nerve wracking at all.
These stories I want you to tell me, because
I bet Dieter's head was flipping.
Well, I'll tell you what I love about Indian. I love Indian Ladder Farm is that every once in a while a friend comes up to me and says, "Oh, I was at this beautiful farm with my family and they have my favorite cider." And I'd be like, "Oh, is it Indian Ladder?" And they said, "How did you know?" And then there's someone that spends time in Albany. And I know that people will be saying the same thing about your beer when the new system's up, even if they're not already. But it is quite a story. And just to give you a shout out, Dieter, that your wife is part of it's a fifth generation farm that goes way back over 100 years. And I have been fortunate to have been there before. How is this new brewery going to impact the tourism and the weekends and things? What have you done on site, like, to change it? I don't – it's been so long for me. Tasting rooms, tours, anything new that's going to be
– So when we took the three barrel out of the production facility, we turned that into a tasting room. So we have a much bigger tasting room where the three barrel was. We've expanded the beer garden as much as we possibly can. And what we're doing now is where the 20 barrel is going is we're putting in a much larger beer garden. We're experiencing, you know, crowds now that we just did not anticipate. Last fall we were experiencing 4-hour waits to get, you know, a beer in the beer garden and so on. So we're trying to essentially, we weren't even going to do this beer garden until next year, but we're trying to speed this up as much as possible to try to accommodate the customers that, you know, really start coming to us in August now. We do get a rather large spring rush now, too, because we do have pick-your-own raspberries and blueberries. So we're getting a lot of people that are coming now to, you know, do the U-pick thing. But now that we have the brewery and the cidery, they come and we have hiking trails and they spend all day with us. So we're seeing a lot of families that just kind of come and camp out.
And Dieter, you guys have always done some really cool collaborations. I mean, you've always been so open to coming on Beer Sessions Radio. There was one event you guys did with Just Brewers. It was some kind of brewers camp out. Or something, or did it have something to do with your hop harvest?
Yeah, we plan on doing that again in the future. It's called Farming Man Fest, sort of, you know, a take on Burning Man, and we burn a big hop effigy, and we try to do it a little different. So we've had like 30 breweries come out, and cideries, and we've had, you know, Mel from Fraunhofer's come. We invite our manufacturers. So it's kind of a big brewing cidery industry kind of meet and greet event where the public can come. We have the brewers come and we do, like, not really round tables. They're really like kind of informal meet the brewer to talk about the beer a little bit, where you can, you know, come up and talk to them. We have bands and we offer camping. We didn't really, because of COVID last year, we didn't do it, obviously. And this year we just didn't know what was going to happen. And And the event has gotten to the size where you really have to start planning it, you know, in January for an August event. And so we decided, well, we'll take this year off too. And so we hope to be back in doing Farmin' Man for 2022.
And then when you have the new brewery running, will you be doing like different kind of collaborations on that system? Or will you still be using the three-barrel system for that?
It really depends on what kind of beer we want to do. If, you know, we're going to use a whole bunch of whole fruit, it's probably easier just to do it on the small system. But chances are anything that we do on the big system is going to be lager beers or anything like that. It's super easy, and we can actually get a higher yield on the output of that.
Well, that's great. Hey, Melanie, back to the industry you're in. Did you guys try out other things before you started the brewing systems? Like, had you guys made like coffee carts or food trucks or anything like that?
Not well, since Front Offer Design's inception, we have worked with coffee companies, like Crew and is a great example here in Saratoga. However, we had no intention of creating Fraunhofer Design. It was not a well thought out business plan that we had, you know, strategically been focusing on for years. It truly all was just happenstance. A local brewery needed us to come and help check out some tanks that were damaged. And they knew we had experience in stainless steel at our machine and fab shop and asked, hey, well, could you make one of these? And it went from there. We made one, and it actually performed significantly better than their existing fermenters. National Grid actually came in and compared the efficiencies of the two tanks, and National Grid now offers monetary incentives to New York State breweries to work with us over less efficient competitors of ours. And so it kind of was like, oh, I guess we have a knack for this. Let's keep digging into it. And then it grew into, can you create a whole, you know, people wanted whole systems. They wanted distilling equipment. There was a lot of different local craft beverage makers who were interested in working with someone local. And it grew from there. And it was sort of, you know, one day at a time, well, I guess we need to put a little bit more emphasis on this side of the business. And then it became, okay, I guess it needs to be its own business with its own strategy. And it just grew over time. So no, there was no, you know, wealth. I would love to say we had this great business plan going into it, but where we tested different markets and found our niche here in the brewing world. But it was a happy happenstance, and it's worked out great. But like I said, we have worked with coffee companies, dairy farms, yogurt companies, cideries, wineries, pretty much any craft beverage maker you can think of. So although we focus on beer brewing equipment, we've done it all.
Here's a question for you. I have a feeling that someone else might want to answer this one. One of the cooler, this might have been 10 years ago, transformations that I saw was Be United, the importers based in Connecticut, took what had been like some kind of old dairy tanker and turned it into a brew transport. So they were basically sending these dairy tanks to like Europe and having the breweries there fill up those tanks with beer. Then they were brought over and delivered on trucks to Connecticut, and then they were put into kegs there and stuff. Does that inspire any of you or ring a bell? I mean, like the similarities between a dairy tank that could be a tanker and shipped and what it might take in terms of the technology to make that work.
Absolutely. The time I spent in Belgium, there is a company, won't say their name. They were making wort, and they were putting it into tanker trucks, and they were bringing it to another brewery and basically just dumping it right in their cool ship so they can make sour beer. So this main brewery was actually doing wort production, and the lambic style brewery was making sour beer, but they would always do it in the tanker trucks.
So there are that. Melanie, has anyone ever come to you with like a repurposed dairy tank to make it into a brewing tank or anything?
P people come to us all the time to refurbish equipment, and to be honest, it doesn't always work that great. So we don't always take those projects on. Although we're always up for a challenge, and we've refurbed a lot of things in the past, what we experience most of the time is it's just better to start from scratch. But there's always fun projects out there. And Scott was right. There's a brewery in Maine right now that's, I think last year, right before COVID, they were putting their beer in fermenters and sending it over on a shipping, in a shipping container on a ship to, I think, Iceland. And then the beer was ready to be conditioned when it got there. And they were drinking it, having a party, and sending their beer back to Maine. Pretty neat. So, yeah, you know, the brewing industry is always fun and has some sort of, there's always a cool idea happening, and we love to be a part of it. But refurbishing equipment doesn't always go as planned. It's just one of those things.
Because you always want to think to yourself, it's like, where was that tank before? How is it cared for?
Well, to that point, Jimmy, we have a couple of dairy tanks that are sitting in our yard right now that we used to use as blending tanks for cider. And if you're interested, they're for sale.
You're not just going to make them into planters or something?
I don't know what to do.
I also have a cool ship that is from an old cottage cheese tank. And it works. It holds to the brim. It's 6.5 barrels.
So, Melanie, the big issue is that when you're making your things from start to finish, you know the quality of the materials, right?
That's exactly it. So the few times that we have tried to fix equipment that we didn't make, some of the issues that we've run into are spider cracking. And so we go to weld onto that, new, cut into that tank and weld it or fix it. And it spider cracks, it breaks. And that is a clear sign that is not quality stainless steel, or it's not the stainless steel that the customer thought they were getting. Or you run into rust. Mm-hmm. Rust does not, stainless steel does not rust. And so it wasn't actually the product that customer thought that they had. So then it becomes really difficult for us to properly fix it and guarantee that they're going to be able to use it the way they want to use it. So you're right. It really just comes down to, we don't know what we're working with, because not everything is what it says it is when it comes to the steel industry. So we would just prefer to make you something from scratch. And if it's a budget thing, we're always happy to work with anybody, New York State to New York State. I mean, we work with people all over North America, but especially our local New York State customers, we're here to partner with you in any way we can. We'll work with your budget. We'll work with your operational needs, your facility needs. We'll make it happen. If you want equipment made in New York, you should get equipment made in New York.
I saw our friend at Strong Road Brewery in Brooklyn. I know he's dedicated to using all New York ingredients. I saw he was very proud that at his new, he has in Red Hook, Brooklyn, he has a new tasting room. That he mentioned on Instagram that he has a Fraunhofer design system there. I thought that was cool because I love Jason's beers.
Oh, yeah. Jason makes delicious beers, and now he makes them on a Fraunhofer design system. So we're pretty jazzed up about that. I got connected with Jason. It might have been a little through CBC, but the first time I met Jason was actually at Indian Ladder's camping Meet the Brewer weekend.
He was at Farming Man.
He was at Farming Man. And so, we had heard of each other, but we really got to meet there. And I think that's when sparks flew and we all got really excited about doing this collaboration of two New York State companies working together. And we just delivered that equipment right after we delivered Indian Ladder's system. And they're getting up and running and finishing off that new beautiful location of theirs. So we're really excited. It's our first system in Brooklyn. Not our first tanks in Brooklyn. We've worked with Allwise Meadery before, but our first brewing system in Brooklyn, and we're really excited about that. And Jason and the guys at Strong Rope are awesome partners.
Yeah. Hey Scotty, what's a beer that's coming out this summer that is worth me traveling up to Altamont for?
All of them.
And well, I need some names for the beer list. Come on.
Well, I'll probably be bringing back, I'll be doing another batch of Megaphone Pond Party. It was my social distancing beer. Once again, it's a Scott name. So it's a beer that has hints of of cannabis and pine and tropical fruit. It's actually really, really nice. What else do I have going on? There's actually talks of doing a collaboration with John from Dubco, which would be really fun. So far, I've only had my schedule out for 3 weeks from now. So I don't really know what's going on now.
Well, that's great. I'm really proud of you. I think when I went up, last time I went to Indian Ladder Farm, you were still working at the C.H. Evans in Albany, right?
Yep, is correct. That's what I have. That's one of my little afro.
Yeah, but I'm really proud of you. You've really grown together. And I think, Dieter, that this is amazing that you guys finally have the new brew system coming online. I can't wait to – I don't know. Do you think there'll be extra beer to send out in New York City, Dieter, or are you guys going to still keep drinking it all upstate?
We're pretty thirsty. I don't know. We're very thirsty up here. It's been a dry COVID, and I don't know how much we're going to get downstate, but we're hoping to get some Superstar down there, maybe some trip to the hardware store, maybe some Indian Lager Farms. You should be seeing those things. We're hoping by the end of the summer, you're definitely going to be starting to see more of our cider down there. We're making a big push into New York City. We are going to be at the new distillery on Great Jones and Broadway that's opening up here in a few weeks. They'll be carrying our cider, and they're probably going to be the first place in Manhattan to carry our beer when we have it. So be looking for that.
Wow, that's going to be great, man. You guys have been special friends, and I always love working with you guys. And I definitely miss being in the studio with you, because I always have some of my most fun episodes with you. But I appreciate you taking the time to work with us on this remote program on Heritage Radio Network.
Yeah, I can't believe you haven't been up here since Scott worked at C.H. Evans. You're being very tardy. You need to come visit.
Yes, on my list, for Jimmy. Sure.
No, it's one of the special. Okay, now I was looking at upcoming events and things. So you have a Renaissance Fair coming to the farm.
Yes, we've been doing the Renaissance Fair. This will be the sixth year. We normally do it in June. It's going to be in August this year. We're also doing two Oyster Fests. We've got one coming up on July 10th and then another one in November. And then in October, we do our ever popular Hawaiian Oktoberfest, which I believe Scott's making a special beer for that this year, in collaboration with the Swinging Palms.
Scott, what any clues as to what that beer will be?
Well, I just talked about it with the bass or the guitar player yesterday, and it's probably going to be a pineapple IPA, possibly a pineapple sour. Made from all the pineapples that we'll use to make stein apples.
Yes, we do make stein apples for the event. We hollow out a pineapple and serve your beer in it.
Oh, I see.
A stein apple.
All right. And then are you guys doing any – do you do a fresh hop beer, or you just use the hops and everything?
Last year I did a fresh hop beer. I think I did it with Columbus and Centennial. Right after we pulled them off of out of Heidi, and they were in the dryer. They just went right on the conditioning floor. I literally just went up with buckets and just filled up everything while everyone's eating hot dogs. And it's like, man, this is a good day. And it's like, cool. Well, I'm going to grab all this stuff and I'm going to go back up to the brewery and put some hot wort on this. And that actually turned out really nice. Usually in the summertime, or around hop harvest, you can actually see that. Because with our beer trailer, that's a rotating hop series. But in right around hop harvest time, that's usually when trailer becomes wet hop, fresh hopped. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the difference between wet hop and fresh hop, Scott and I are not really enamored of wet hop beers because they tend to taste a little vegetable-y and you can't really, the consistency is not really theirs. But because of our situation that we can take hops directly from our hop yard and get them picked within 20 minutes and in the dryer, as soon as they're picked, we can make a beer with the freshest, driest, stable hops that you can possibly get. So we have that advantage that a lot of other breweries do not have.
And how many acres of hops do you have now?
We're still at 2.5. So, it's not a huge planting of hops. We're going to be expanding out to 5, and that will be pretty much to make sure that we have redundancy for the 20 barrel.
Wow. There's so much going on. This is really great. I miss you guys. Dieter, one of the shows I did with you and Laura was when your East Coast Hop Growers Handbook came out. And you guys have also introduced me to Dr. Paul.
Sorry.
One of the top.
We apologize for that.
No, that was great.
He cleared out the room. He cleared out the studio.
We tease Dr. Paul, but we love him.
Yeah. Man, I'll make a toast here right now. I'm drinking a night shift. New England double IPA called the
Jimmy,
Buzz.
Don't drink Nightshade. It's poison.
Nightshade. And I feel like it's the summer. I don't know if it's summer of Goza, summer of lager. Right now, I feel like it's the summer of the double IPA. Maybe that's just how I feel about how happy I am to be back out in the world. So cheers to the summer of double IPA. Mm-hmm. And Melanie, congratulations to you. Hello to your husband and baby. Congratulations. And this has been a really interesting show. There's always more to talk about, but definitely a big shout out to the trades. And don't forget how important they are and trade schools. Because I'd say without that, you guys wouldn't be making your world-class brewing systems here in New York, right?
Absolutely. We couldn't do it without our tradesmen, and we hope to continue to promote the trades throughout New York State. And cheers to you guys. Thanks for having me on. I also miss seeing you, Jimmy, in person, and Scott and Dietrich. I'll probably see you soon.
Yeah, we'll probably see you next week.
Exactly. COVID hasn't stopped us.
All right, so Scott, use your best voice. So tell me again, where is your brewery located and what's the name of the brewery?
We are Indian Ladder Farm Cidery and Brewery at 342 Altamont Road in Altamont, New York, outside of Albany.
You guys are the great. Scott, Dieter, and Melanie, thanks for joining me here on Heritage Radio Network. Big shout out to our engineer Armin Spingen and our assistant producer Caroline Fox. I'm Jimmy Carboni. We'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Woo! Thank you.
Beer Sessions Radio is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.